Member-supported Jazz 90.1 proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415 or soundbites.org. Now, alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Good afternoon, Mr. and Mrs. American, all the chips in the PC. It is Saturday, the very last day of Anno Domini 2011, and you lucky people, you're listening to Soundbites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at however many minutes it is after the hour, we're going to be bringing
3 minutes.
3 minutes. We're going to be bringing you news, views, stuff to choose, nothing to lose. Kick off your shoes.
Yeah, you got to kind of watch it. The clocks are off here. They hit a power outage on Thursday. Evidently, it was planned, but the...
Nobody told anybody.
Communications got a little messed up, and of course the clocks are off a little bit, and they're adjusting. How's that?
They're adjusting. I like the adjusting part. All right. Actually, this story shows the perils of doing the news too early. Verizon Wireless has built its reputation on the quality of its cellular network, touting its reliability over rival AT&T Inc. But a series of outages this month threatened the largest U.S. wireless carrier's image. On Thursday, Verizon Wireless said its engineers had fixed the third outage in December for its new high-speed data network. Some customers had complained they were getting slower connections or no signal at all. Verizon Wireless further frustrated customers Thursday by disclosing it would impose a $2 fee on those paying their bills by phone or on Verizon's website starting January 15th. The company said it was necessary to help provide single bill payment options.
I think disclosing is too strong a word. It was hidden in the fine print on your last bill.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Customers could avoid the fee by paying electronically through their bank or by mailing a check. Customers paying with a credit card could avoid the fee, but only those who sign up to have the card automatically charged. But some cried foul over the fee, which effectively amounted to a $24 annual surcharge. I'm getting a little tired of businesses figuring out ways to get their hands in my pockets, wrote one customer on the Verizon forum. Verizon Wireless is considered to have a head start in offering products that run on its fourth-generation network, a point emphasized in its advertisements. But this week's outage was the fourth time this year Verizon Wireless's 4G network went down, and the third time in December. In each case, Verizon offered little explanation for the outages, which were generally resolved within about 24 hours. The company said Wednesday's problem was resolved overnight. Its 3G service continued to operate normally, and calling and texting were unaffected. Verizon Wireless calls the outages regrettable and vowed to improve its 4G service to be on par with its more broadly used 3G service. Certainly, we've shown we're not there in some aspects, said Mike Haberman, vice president of network operations. The FCC said it was concerned about Verizon's actions and would look into the carrier's decision to charge some customers $2 to pay their bills. Now, this is where we end up with the perils of doing the news early. I did the news about 4 o'clock yesterday afternoon, mm-hmm. and at 4:45, Verizon canceled the $2 fee. They said they weren't going to charge it anymore. However, our polls, I didn't discover that until very late last night because I just stopped looking at the news at that point and actually went and had time with my family.
So maybe they don't do it that way.
They'll do it another way.
I was going to say, don't you think the creative minds have said, oh, since we can't do doing it this way, we can slide it in as another surcharge or something else onto your bill.
They will. But our question for you, a poll of the week at soundbites.org, that's bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you, is how are you feeling about Verizon Wireless these days? And the choices are happy with the speed of 4G LTE, don't care about the $2 fee, happy with the speed, unhappy about the fee, unhappy with the outages, don't care about the fee, unhappy with the outages, unhappy about the fee, and don't have Verizon, so don't care. Right now, we have 44 people who've taken the poll, and 64% of you don't have Verizon, and 18% of you are unhappy with the outages and unhappy about the fee. So there's a problem right there. And then when you're done with that, I know you'll have more to say. So if you look at the yellow box underneath, click on Give Us Your Opinion. It'll take you to a truly tremendous website where you can enter your opinion. So far, we've got about, 7 people who've written, one who double entered. but that's okay. And the question there, of course, is what's your experience been with Verizon Wireless? And, of course, that's our question to you. Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Or toll free at 1-800-790-0415. And we will be happy to take your call. And particularly those of you who are listening in New Jersey. I assume you're listening on the live feed, the stream. Yep. There. Because I don't think we're syndicated in New Jersey.
Not that I... Come on. This thing is used to staying up so high.
Right.
Because of Rob Linton. You know, I come in and I'll poke myself in the head.
Sure.
Because of the height on this thing with him. Yeah, like you say, I think they're going to just come around with another way to, you know... slide that in, and we're going to be hearing more on that.
So. Oh, they will. There's no question to that. They're not going to get rid of it. You know, once they get it into their heads to charge a fee.
Well, like I said, they look at a way of adding more money to their bottom line for the stockholders, and that's right. What it's all about. They don't give a darn about the users in that. It's all about appeasing the stockholders, and the stockholders always want to know, well, how you going to, you know, keep me here and, you know, staying invested. You know, if you're not going to show me any growth, the only right. way they're going to get growth is by tapping you folks more.
I say it time and again. Remember that when a company is publicly traded, the only customer they have is the shareholder. So when you say, but they're not doing anything good for the customers, yeah, they are, because you're not the customer.
Right.
You're the product that they present to the customer.
Mm-hmm.
The customer is the shareholder. And Google Doodle today... By the way, is the New Year's Eve Google Doodle. So check that out at google.com, as if you didn't know where that was. Very cute one today.
Just think, we get the rest of the year off.
Thank heaven, huh?
Yeah.
I'm very excited. I'm thrilled to say that I do indeed have the rest of this year off, and I'm pleased, and Punch is proud to
say that. I'm even going to take Monday off.
Yeah.
I'm going to let my crew work. Because I worked yesterday, and I was supposed to have yesterday off.
Good for you. I publicly want to thank Dave, and especially Dan Deary.
He's my partner.
Who revived my Chromebook.
We had fun with that.
I bet you did. It's a great little machine, isn't it?
Well, anytime, you know, we can... And I know you'd say... Well, I've seen you. When I've worked on your computer before, I've seen you break out in a sweat just for me.
Yeah, exactly.
Whereas me, I just get all hyped up. You know, it's like... Wait, I get to take something apart.
Yeah, as long as I'm not there looking over your shoulder.
You know, I mean, if you saw some of the other things that we've done, ways that we've, you know, worked with hard drives, and they, let's just say, they range from using a microwave or a toaster oven to using a freezer.
As long as you don't use much percussive maintenance, you should be good.
And we've used both of those implements to get things running. And, you know, it's just the way it is. But speaking about running, I'm going to do a little sidetrack here.
Uh-oh.
Sort of a mini rant, but type of thing, because folks are getting a little concerned, and rightfully so. There is a new root kit floating around.
Yeah.
And it's called Zero Access. And this one is a nasty one. I mean, it literally takes over the machine and all my tools right now.
Can't get it?
It ain't touching it. It ain't touching it, and we've been trying all different type of stuff. And, you know, that's the one nice thing up on the web. You know, a lot of us repair shops and that, we talk with each other and, you know, throw ideas back and forth on the forums and that type of stuff. And right now, this one is a darn nasty one that almost comes down to we have to wipe the machine, back the data up, and put the machine, you know, back to the refresh install of the operating system, which means, and this is where the folks get a little ticked off, they have to reinstall some of the software.
Right.
You know, granted, we can put, you know, the typical stuff up, but, you know, Microsoft Office or these other applications, they've got to redo.
And how many times do they say, well, I don't have those disks. My friend installed it for me.
And that's, I'm sorry, you know, but...
Time to go back to your friend.
Yeah, you know, that's the way it is, and...
Or buy yourself a legal copy.
But right now, this one is really taking over the internet really bad. And what's happening is you could be going to legitimate sites. And here's what happens, folks. Along with the other one that is very prevalent out there is now the antivirus 2012 Windows version 7 and Vista. So it comes up and says, you know, you're running Windows 7 antivirus program 2012. And that's running rampant. What's happening is you can be going to legitimate sites, and they have what they call HoverClick. And what HoverClick is you can be going to, like I said, a legitimate site. But if these hackers found in the code, because they can see the source code, you know, a lot of the websites, and sure. if they can find different holes. Holes are what they are, folks, is something that's not protected that I can attach something else to. And what they do is they attach their code within that code, unbeknownst to the web page. And all you have to be doing is just hovering. And they'll usually look for areas where they know if you're on a particular page, you're going to click here or you're going to click there. And all you have to do is not even click on it. Excuse me. It's just hover over it.
Or just hover, move your mouse over it.
Just move it over. Bam, it's coming down at you. Yep. When they go, well, how do I stop it? You know, you just got to do due diligence because right. it's a constant game of leapfrog. In our world, we've been seeing this since the 286s, and viruses have been out there. You put up a wall, they find a way around it. We put up another wall, they find a way around it. So it's a constant game. And if you, the only folks go, well, how can I stop it? Well, don't go on the internet. Well,
right.
I got to get my email and all that. Well, you know.
A lot of this stuff comes from ad sites. Mm-hmm. You know, any website you go to that shows ads can be serving one of these because although the ad deliverers like Google and all the others are pretty good about scrubbing them, they get 100 million ads an hour.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and so scrubbing them is not easy, particularly when it's a brand new vector.
And they can sneak it in there. So, you know, right now, folks, be cautious and don't be surprised whether you bring it to like Steve or me or one of the other local shops and they tell you, well, you know what, you're infected. Now, here's the word caution. They can back up your data because what these, like the Zero Access likes to do is hide in the TCP IP area.
Right.
So, and it's constantly renaming itself.
Right.
There's no consistency. So your data should be okay. Again, what we can do, you know, we do in our shop, and if, you know, some of the companies say, well, no, I got to totally wipe your machine. Don't take it there. I'm sorry. We, you know, we have learned, you know, a lot of folks, oh, I'm going to lose everything. No, you shouldn't have to lose everything. The data should be able to be backed up off to an external drive. You'll have to reinstall the operating system, reinstall the programs, but the data can go back. The data can go back.
The big danger is that you sometimes end up backing up the virus infection. So skip your downloads folder. Don't back up your downloads folder. Don't restore your downloads folder because that may
no,
be
I'm
where
I'm talking
it came
mainly
from.
Documents.
Yep.
And pictures and that type of stuff, they usually won't have it. Now, your iTunes and that type of stuff, some of these music, you know, these folks are still going to BearShare and all these others and sharing with their friends.
Right.
You know, what we'll do is we'll back it up to an external hard drive and then we'll scrub it with our, you know, off of our network.
Right. The reality is if you think you're putting one over on somebody, you're infected.
Yeah.
That's the way it works. I cannot tell you how many times somebody has come to me and said, my machine is infected. And I say, well, you know, where have you been? Oh, nowhere. Do you download music? Well, only from, you know, people I know.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh.
Yeah, where do they get it from?
Did you ever download a song and it didn't play? Yeah, it happens once in a while. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's actually an infection.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's not a real. Or did you ever download a picture from somebody and it didn't show up? Or maybe it even did. You know, you get a lot of the pictures that are out there and you know what kind of pictures I'm talking about. A lot of those pictures have embedded in them steganographically,
yeah.
A virus.
Isn't that a dinosaur?
The simple fact, yes, exactly. That you have a dinosaur hidden in them who comes out and eats your head. Shut up.
Boy, we're getting porky.
We are porky. It's the end of the year. Shut up. I'm old. Leave me alone. Get off my damn lawn. Anyway, the basic thing.
I said that the solar panel's heating up.
It is. You aren't kidding. Thank you.
That still brings a chuckle.
Good. I'm glad. No, I don't remember what we were talking about, but it doesn't matter. The point is, you get, but yeah. There, yeah, exactly. That's
craft.
The problem.
Craft.
Exactly right. Exactly.
I have used
right.
that so much.
You need to get a hat now. Craft.
Yeah. Well, so, for craft.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And then I explain it to him, and then they go, oh, can I steal that one? I just, I'm already stealing it from Nick. Yeah, go ahead. I'm sure he won't mind.
I'm stealing it from a friend at the market. Market was busy today.
Oh, really?
I was very surprised. It turns out that a couple of the other vendors who also sell coffee were not there, so all those people were coming to us and getting better coffee. But the reality is that we just didn't expect that today. It's coming up toward the winter phase of the public market, so a lot of the summer vendors are gone.
Oh, that sell the fresh vegetables?
Yeah, yeah. Okay. Well, some of them are still there, but the vast majority of the farmers are done.
Yeah.
And a lot of them are the type who move south. Even, you know, the ones who sell tchotchkes and stuff like that, they move south for the winter and go to those public markets. So they've packed up and gone.
Yeah, because they are not equipped to stay out in the cold and the snow.
Right. So the indoor shed will be open all year. We'll be in there, and there's a
That's where you are all the time.
Yeah,
anyway.
And there's a couple of hardy people who still put up outside. But I'll tell you what, it's a fun thing. We are the number one public market in the nation. We won an award. Somebody gives out an award for that sort of thing, and they gave it to us, which was very nice. So be proud of your city. For those of you who live here in Rochester, we are the number one public market in the nation. It's very cool. Thank you.
A little delay in there, I'm sorry.
It's entirely all right. And it's a very nifty place if you've not been there. Winter is both the best and worst time to come. You don't get all the vendors, but you do get a parking space. So
and good coffee.
And great coffee. So it's a very cool place, and you should give it a try if you haven't. I'm proud of my city, and I'm proud of our market, and it's pretty cool. All right, listen, we're going to take a break. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, with Steve Ray, with me, Nick Francesco, and you. You can give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299, or, of course, toll-free at 1-800-790-0415. We're going to be back with a whole lot more of the longest-running computer show in the known universe. We are Soundbites, right here on the truly great and member-supported Jazz 90.1. Hey everybody, I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And we are Soundbites. And we have Dar on the line. Friend of the show, Dar, from Toronto, Ontario, Canada. Welcome, Dar. How was your holiday?
Okay. Season's greetings and all that.
All of that.
Same
to you,
too.
Was Santa good to you?
You betcha.
That's what counts.
Okay, you mentioned about lawns and getting off the lawn, correct?
Yes, we did.
Okay, doodle off to YouTube and do a search on corner gas. Get the F off my lawn. F as in freedom.
Freedom.
Get the F off my lawn.
Very cool.
You guys, have you ever seen corner gas?
I have not.
Okay, that's because it's from up north.
There you go.
Low-key, set out in the prairies. Okay, so there aren't any stunts and fireballs and things shooting away.
Yep.
Okay, the F off my lawn.
I will check that out. Thank you.
Thank you so much, and happy New Year to all.
You guys have the best stuff out there, though. I mean, you had a TV show that I really loved called Slings and Arrows. Came out of Canada. Great TV show. There was another one called Little Mosque on the Prairie, which was very fun. And some of your comedy groups are just amazing. You have the best stuff up there.
Yeah, Kids in the Hall.
Yeah, exactly.
In fact, I was watching Flashpoint with Enrico Colantoni. Basically, it's the SRU in Toronto, which we call SWAT down here. And I first saw it when I was in Toronto. And, that's a pretty cool show. And then they started airing it on network here in the States. And now they moved it to ION Television, way up high in the cable line.
Right.
But what's weird is that Enrico Colantoni is in this show, and he also plays the bad guy on the Person of Interest show. With James Caviezel, So he's right. The good guy in this show, and he's the bad guy in the other show, which is kind of interesting.
And he was in Galaxy Quest.
Galaxy Quest, yep. He was the head alien.
Yep.
He's the bald guy that has done every show you could imagine, but you don't know his name.
Yeah, exactly.
So I've learned his name, Enrico Colantoni, a nice Canadian.
How do you? Yeah, exactly. Exactly. All right, thanks, Star.
Cheers. Bye.
Corner Gas, we'll be checking him out. No question. That's very cool. Like I said, there's, you know, one of the things that we forget is that not all the best stuff comes out of Hollywood. There's some great stuff from other cities in America. And, of course, Vancouver is where pretty much everything in the Sci-Fi Channel and a couple of the other stations is created. And we have the very nice shows that come out of Canada as well, which you can't get on Netflix either, which kind of makes me angry.
I always get a kick out of when they make fun of their own Canadianness sometimes. There were several episodes of Stargate, a big sci-fi show filmed in Vancouver, where they brought in Canadian characters. You know, 90% of the actors are Canadian anyway, but they actually had some Canadian characters. And there's this energy source called the ZPM. And Jack, you know, played by Richard Dean Anderson, what do you mean ZPM? Oh, the ZPM. I'm Canadian. Sue me.
All right. Our next caller is Linda from Greece, New York. Hiya, Linda. How was your holiday?
Great. I got two good presents and one bad present. The bad present was I got the flu.
Oh, dear.
I got an iPad, and I've got a question for you. I've gone to every forum I can think of. And I've even called the Apple Store. You told me to turn preview pane off when you check your email, correct?
Right.
On the iPad, you can't do that.
Yeah, I think that's right.
I think you're right. Well, you can certainly do that in Thunderbird.
What I do is I go on my iTouch, I look at all the ones I don't want, I take those off, then I go to the iPad.
Well, and
I watch myself. They got such a great product, but you always said never have preview pane on.
Right.
Yeah, the danger is that bad messages will know that you viewed them and can add you to their junk mail list.
So that's why I go to the iTouch, because on the iTouch, I don't have preview pane on there. So I take all the bad stuff out, then I go to the iPad.
Let's see.
I've tried everything. I even called the Apple Store where I got it, and they don't know.
I just found something on the net. I've got my iPod here, but I don't have my iPad. It says to go to Settings, Mail, Preview, set to None.
I did that. It doesn't work.
And it still doesn't work?
Nope.
How weird is that?
My other present was, and this is the coolest thing on Earth. If anybody ever heard of Roku?
I have a Roku. Yeah, I love my Roku.
Isn't that the greatest?
Yeah, it really is. It really is. I have a Netflix account, and I watch movies all the time.
I've got Hulu Plus. Oh,
Hulu
my God.
Plus as well. Also, check out Crackle.
What's Crackle?
It's also on there, and it's movies and TV shows.
Ooh.
You do get little 30-second commercials during them, but so
Hulu
what?
Hulu Plus, you get commercials, too, but I love it.
Yeah.
So what'd you get for Christmas, Nick?
Actually, I got a couple of nice books. I got... a Western, and I got Paula Poundstone's autobiography.
Oh, that's got to be good.
Oh, golly, Ned, it was very, 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 very funny. She's a funny woman.
Now, Steve and Dave, what did you get?
Oh, I got some. I got the complete Harry Potter Blu-ray CD set, 11 DVDs, and a real neat pair of isotoner gloves that works with my cell phone. So I can not have to take my gloves off and touch the screen, and it works.
Wow.
They are sweet.
So far, we haven't been able to use them.
Right.
I haven't needed to, which is
Yeah, well, now this, you know, I can just pull my phone out, don't have to take my gloves off, and I can swipe it down to, you know, or hit it to answer, and it works a nuts. It was a great gift.
Hey, Steve, what'd you get?
Oh, I got the Steve Jobs book and got a couple of... computer science-y, fun T-shirts.
But I'll tell you that the only thing, as I said, the only thing to mail, but that iPad is great. I love it because my eyesight's starting to go. My iTouch was just a little too small.
Yep. That's one of the really nice things about the iPad is everything can be bigger.
No, it's not that the eyesight's going. The arms aren't long enough.
That's true.
Yeah. I just choose
that's true. Thank you.
I just choose to phrase it that way.
I call you guys, but... So you got any plans for New Year's Eve, guys?
We have the same plan every New Year's Eve. The family sits around the fondue pot, believe it or not. We found it in the basement one year and thought, what the heck? Let's try this this year. And it's now the family tradition. We watch a couple of movies. We sit around the fondue pot and we talk to each other. And in fact, I tell you, the best Christmas present I got is I heard my daughter talking to a friend of hers who invited her to a Christmas party. And my daughter actually said, no, we have a family tradition and I'm not going to miss it.
Wow.
Yeah, it was great.
You did something right there, dude.
I did something right, or she just didn't like that person she was talking to. I don't know.
So,
but,
yeah, so, I mean, you know, I'm over the flu now, but I'll tell you, Christmas Eve was not fun.
No, I understand that. I understand that. That's. But I'm glad you're better. I'm glad you're loving your iPod. Have a great New Year, Linda.
Yeah, you too. I'm staying home and watching my Roku.
Good for you. You'll love it.
Okay, thanks, guys.
Sure, have fun. Bye. Yeah, I really like the Roku. It's a fun device. And they're cheap.
Oh yeah, no, I know they are.
They're not expensive at all, and you get you pay for if you pay for a Netflix subscription, you pay for Hulu Plus, et cetera.
It's the a la carte sort of plan we've been wanting to for years. I want to pay for the channels I want to watch, not all the other crap.
Well, exactly. So we have Netflix. Crackle is free. Hulu I haven't paid for, so I'm not getting the Plus version of that. Pandora's on it. A bunch of other things. Twit TV is on it, and a bunch of others. So. I find that I'm watching it more and more.
One of the annoying things that we've started seeing is that a lot of the premium cable channels, like HBO, they have their own HBO Go app and their HBO Go channel on Roku. You can't watch it unless you also subscribe to HBO cable television because of a lot of the old rules and regulations. When cable television was all there was, the cable TV has an exclusive contract. So a lot of people who want to cut their cable TV cord and just watch stuff on the internet, it's very difficult because you can't get that live show without having a cable TV subscription. So it's very annoying. If you don't mind waiting for the DVDs to come out or waiting a few days for it to show up on iTunes or waiting for a month or so to show up on Netflix or Hulu. But then I've run into a couple of times where I missed an episode of something and I want to go back to Hulu and watch it. Well, they only go back two or three episodes. They don't go back five or six.
Yeah.
So it's like the content providers who sell to the cable TV and also sell to the internet subscriptions try to force you to pay for both.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Well, I'll tell you what, though, for what it gives me, I do find myself watching stuff on the Roku box a lot more than I watch anything else.
Yeah, I don't watch a lot of regular TV.
Yep.
I mean, there's maybe four or five programs most. I like the Hawaii Five-O, the CSI.
And sometimes
NCIS, both local and LA, and then Bones. Yeah, that's it.
And sometimes Monday at 10, you can't be at the TV. So that was all the old VCR days, and now DVRs. But with sites like Netflix and Hulu, you don't have to be there when it's on. You can watch it whenever you want.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing stuff. And the box itself was what's there. $79 or $99 now?
I think, the SD box is $69 and the HD box is $99.
Yeah.
Well, that's the thing. You know, I've got Netflix, which I get the one movie, at a time. But if there's something in between while a movie is, in transit, I'll go over to Redbox.
Yep.
And grab one of those for a buck.
Yeah, it's hard to beat the stuff that's going on now, and I agree with you. It's ridiculously cheap now to get some of this stuff.
Yeah, it is.
It's inconvenient to have to go out to Redbox compared to, picking it up on your Roku box. But for the inconvenience, you get a newer movie.
Yeah, exactly.
We've got boxes starting at $50 now.
Yeah.
Well, the thing of it is I've had the Blu-ray player for a little while now. But since my sister started living with me, and she brought along a 55-inch 1080p TV.
There you go.
It's like, holy... I started watching one of the Harry Potter movies that I hadn't seen. And it's like, in that Blu-ray, it's like, holy...
See, now when your sister moves out, you're going to be getting your own TV.
Oh, yeah.
You know you are.
50-inch or bigger. Well, it's forced me to. because my current TV went upstairs to my bedroom, my 40-inch, which I love up there. So, yeah, now I'll have nothing downstairs. So, oh, I guess I'll have to go get one. But
guess you'll have to.
But for right now, this 55-inch is, I'm loving it. And I didn't think, you know, at first, because, you know, my house is laid out weird because it was built in 1928. Right. And back in those days, they didn't have TVs. It was a little radio.
Right.
You know, and so the design and that of the house, but, you know, I switched things around in that, and I got it laid out pretty good, and it's like sitting in a theater, though. It's like, whoa.
we talk about the size of the television you need to see the advantages of the HD. LG has an 85-inch 4K.
Don't worry about it, Linda. You can let it go. She's trying to sneak in.
LG has an 85 or 84-inch.
Happy New Year.
4K television. So it's even the 1080p is 1920 by 1080 resolution. This is 3840 by 2160.
Meske.
And they're saying that to really see the advantage of a 4K screen, it's got to be 25 feet.
You got to be 25 feet away?
No, the screen has to be 25 feet wide.
Oh, yeah. We'll have a bunch of those pretty soon.
A 1080p television, they say you need at least a 50-inch or more to see the difference between 720 and 1080. Right. And now when we go up to the 2K screens or even 4K screens, that bigger and bigger.
The one thing that I don't know about anybody else, but that I haven't been really keen on is the 3D ones. I don't know if that's really good.
To sit there
and, you know, watch TV and have to put on these glasses.
Yep.
I mean, you know, they just lost some of the appeal there. You know what I mean? They're trying to tout it, you know. But to me, it's like, no, you just haven't made a good case for me. You know, and I see, you know, it's kind of cool. I mean, I've seen, gone to the theater, sat there with the glasses for one movie. I don't mind it. I happened to see Thor in 3D, and that was really cool. I mean, when he's throwing that anvil and everything else, whoa.
See, I don't even care one way or the other about 3D movies. I go to them when they're at the time that's convenient for me to go.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if that's what's showing, I'll watch a 3D movie. But
right.
I'm not interested in paying the extra money because the extra money's not worth the 3D to me. It's just not – I don't care about it.
And TVs are getting so cheap right now. I mean, this holiday season was a good time for a lot of folks to take advantage, even on, you know, the 32 and the 40-inch screens. I mean, they were well under $1,000, and that's for 1080p.
Yep. Yeah, the TVs are getting cheaper. Well, they're trying to sell people on 3D TVs now.
Yeah, and like Steve said, you know, the next thing is going to be going for the 2K.
Right.
That's when I'll jump on and get the 55-inch 1080p.
They're making Abraham Lincoln, Vampire Hunter.
Yeah, the posters are already out.
I haven't seen it yet.
Yeah.
Oh. Because Sense and Sensibility and Sea Monsters was the first one, right?
No, Pride and Prejudice and Vampires.
Zombies.
And Zombies.
Yeah.
The other one that's going to be coming out is the new Batman one.
Yeah, that's coming out.
Dan happened to see, was down there when they were filming.
Nice.
Was hoping to get in on a trailer, you know, as an extra, I'm sorry. But he saw some of the trailer. Boy, that one... it's looking good.
Yeah, that should be fun.
There's a website, back to the 3D topic, realorfake3d.com, that tells you what movies were shot in 3D and which ones were they added 3D after the fact. And the ones being shot in 3D, the effects are that much better, especially some of the behind-the-scenes from The Hobbit. He's got like 45 red cameras doing multiple 3D shots.
Right. All right, listen, we're going to take a break. We will be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Dan from Pittsford, who's waiting patiently on the line, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 39 minutes after the hour. You can join us at 585-966-JAZZ, 966-5299, toll-free 1-800-790-0415. Soundbites, member-supported Jazz, 90.1. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 43 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites, and we have Dan from Pittsford on the line. Welcome, Dan. What's your question?
It's Mac-related. Are you guys up to it?
One of us are.
Okay. One of us might be.
Am.
I work with very large files, and I have a Mac Pro and a couple of terabyte hard drives. A lot of these are video files and photo files. And lately, things have been a little sluggish. So I did repair disk permissions. I've got to clean my Mac program. I actually filled up a terabyte hard drive, and I moved a lot of those files off, so I had at least 20% of working space. But it's sluggish, and I'm getting the beach ball a lot. And I was talking with a friend of mine. He said, well, maybe you should defrag. And I said, defrag? That's only for Windows. And he said, no, it might be the trick for the Mac.
Well, defragging is only for older file formats, FAT32 under Windows, MFM, the older formats. With NTFS and the Mac HFS Plus, generally speaking, you don't need to defragment because the OS doesn't let it get fragmented in the first place.
However, if you do a lot of files,
yeah,
and a lot of adding and removing files, and normally I would say you do not do enough to warrant this, but with video editing, you might.
You might.
It can't hurt to do it very rarely.
Yeah, I knew a guy that would defragment every week, and he wore his hard drive out really fast.
Right.
One thing that it may be is a fragmented directory, which can make it slow looking for files. There's a utility called Disk Warrior that can rebuild your directory and fix those sorts of problems as well.
Okay, so but. Basically, the beauty of the Mac is you don't have to worry about it too much, and something else is going on.
With the way the file systems are these days. One thing you can do is take a look at your activity monitor in the utilities folder and look at what processes are running and watch what processes is eating your system CPU. One of the things you'll find is if you have Flash running, it's almost always Flash causing the problems. Right now, I'm looking at my computer. Flash is taking 73% of my CPU.
Wow.
Because I'm streaming video, and Ustream uses Flash for streaming.
Yeah. Okay.
You can sometimes see where those problems are occurring and update that program if necessary, delete the preferences for that program so that it creates new ones, and try to isolate it that way.
Okay, great.
There's one easy diagnostic fix you can do is called a safe boot. Hold the shift key down while you're booting, and what that does is it only loads the Apple kernel extensions. It only loads the basic set of fonts, but it deletes a lot of the system cache files, the old log files, and things like that. And that can speed up a system just by making it cleaner with cleaning out those old log files.
So I just do that and then power up, and the next time a normal boot up. And
right. Yep.
Oh, great. Okay, super.
Sure.
Thank you.
There you go.
It's always amazing, and when you buy your machine, it's really, really, really fast, and a couple, 3 years later, it feels really slow.
Yeah, some of that is just your perception.
Yeah.
Because you've gotten used to it.
Like I say, what always brings me back to reality is when I get a client's machine in, and I have to go back to dial-up.
Yep.
Yep.
Oh, the internet isn't fast. You know, I mean, it isn't slow enough, I meant to say.
Yeah, right, right.
Dial-up isn't fast.
Yeah, right. But, you know, back when it was the only thing we had, we were thrilled to get it.
Dude, you don't have to tell me.
And we boasted. I just got a 1,200 baud modem, buddy. Your 300 baud modem is four times slower.
Well, that's like I told, I used to tell the story. You know, that's how I justified with Lori going from a 1,200 baud up to a 2,400 baud modem.
When your especially phone bill is higher than
your mortgage payment, she was ready to cut my phone line.
Or something else.
Yeah. Well, we won't go there. God love her.
I was thinking throat. What were you thinking?
Yeah.
Oh.
Was it Phil?
That too? Yeah.
Phil and John and Jerry, all the internet gods, would publish lists every month of who had the best phone rates depending on where you're calling, and people would switch their phone lines every month. Oh, we should express our condolences to Phil Dampier. His father passed away last week.
Oh, I did not know this. I'm so sorry.
The Stop the Cat blog that he runs.
Sorry, Phil. Sorry. I've been challenging my wife about our phone, our landline phone.
Yep.
The only calls we ever get on it now are soliciting. So
yep.
I'm not.
Drop your landline in favor of a cell phone or internet phone call, you know, even something like Magic Jack. Which we've been using at our office. It's $20 a year for unlimited phone calls in North America.
Right.
And it uses your internet service that you already pay for and you're going to want to pay for anyway. And so $20 a year is better than the $20 a month
for how many phone lines?
One. Mm. But Yeah, $20
so
a year.
So get a second one for another $20 a year.
Yep.
You know, how bad is that? Really?
They've got a it used to be a little USB dongle that you'd plug into your computer, and software on your computer would actually handle the VoIP calls. They have a new model now that it's just an embedded Linux box, and you plug it directly into your router, Ethernet to your router, and a plain old telephone jack to connect to a telephone.
Man, you can't beat that. You cannot beat that.
Nope.
All right, we're going to go to the phones. Our next caller is George from Greece, New York. Welcome, George. What's your question?
Fellas, it's good to hear you. Did you enjoy your week off?
Good to be heard. Yes, we did.
Yep.
Yes, we did. I lazed
much
about
needed.
Saturday. It was very pleasant.
I had to work.
Sorry.
I hate retail sometimes.
Yeah, I understand that. So what's your question, George?
I got a note here from, it would be 2 weeks ago or so. You talked about a voice recognition software product, and I have it phonetically written down as Siri or Shiri.
Siri, yeah, S-I-R-I. It's a new feature in the Apple iPhone 4S.
Spell that again, please.
S-I-R-I.
S-I-R-I.
It's do you have an iPhone?
Hmm. I do not.
It's only for the iPhone.
Okay, that's what I was going to get.
And only the 4S.
Tell me more about it.
Yeah, it's a personal assistant where you ask questions with voice, and then it answers you in voice. There have been dictation programs for years. Nuance's Dragon Dictate is probably one of the more popular dictation software. And they actually have free versions for iPhone and Android where you can dictate, I think it's a minute or so. So you can dictate quick emails, and then it transcribes it into text, and you can paste into an email. But the Siri assistant in the iPhone has a personality, which is sort of the difference in other, you know, voice control systems. And people have found out that by asking it crazy questions, you can get interesting answers.
Android has something now called Vlingo, V-L-I-N-G-O, for their phones, which is similar. You can run programs and do things like that. But
I think I just read that Nuance bought Vlingo.
Yes, and the Android folks, well, Google in general, are working on a product whose code name is Majel, M-A-J-E-L, which is the first name of Majel Roddenberry, Majel Barrett Roddenberry, who was the wife of Gene Roddenberry. She was also Nurse Chapel on the original Star Trek.
And the voice
and
of
from
the
every other Star Trek, she was the voice of the computer.
Yep.
And so they've named the computer after her, and essentially it's going to be like Siri. So we'll see that on the Android phones. But again, these things are for phones and tablet. Well, Siri is only for the iPhone 4GS. Vlingo will run on any Android device, and theoretically, Majel will run on any Android. Well, any Android device with at least a little bit of oomph in the processor.
One of the annoying things with Siri is that it was a third party company that ran on all of the iPhones, and Apple bought them. And then for 2 years, nothing. We didn't know what was happening. And then when they announced this Siri technology built into the iPhone 4S, they killed the Siri application and functionality for all the old iPhones.
Right. Of course they did. But yeah, you can only pick up Siri for the iPhone 4S. You can only pick up Vlingo for Android phones. And Majel will be available for Android phones at some point. They were originally saying by the end of the year. I think they're going to miss that date.
Vlingo has BlackBerry and iPhone apps
BlackBerry
as well.
And iPhone. Yeah. Right. I've forgotten that.
But the back question on that is, do we want to be speaking to our phones all the time?
I really have thought about that, and outside of my car, it is very rare that I would want to speak to my phone.
You think of an office full of cubicles, and the guy in the next cubicle says, you know, computer, erase my hard drive, and your hard drive erases itself.
Well, there's a game being played now throughout RIT, and I'm sure every other school. The minute you hear that little bling that means Siri is listening, kids start shouting stuff.
Oh, boy.
Phone mom. You know, and real stuff, not, you know, like delete porn or you know, download, you know, play thermonuclear war or whatever. I mean, they shout real things that Siri would actually understand. Yep. And stuff, generally it's phone mom or phone dad or phone home, just so that suddenly they're calling home. Now they have to explain to their parents. They didn't really want to talk to them.
Yep. Oops.
Yeah.
Oops.
Steve made mention of a product that I've been trying to track a little bit. What are you hearing about Dragon as a useful kind of lower end product?
It's sort of been the standard in dictation software for years.
So it's been hanging on there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's been purchased and rebranded and the core technology is still there. Now owned by a company called Nuance, but the Dragon Dictate. They also have medical and legal dictionaries. They have free versions for the iPhone and Android to do quick dictation. But it's sort of the standard in speech dictation.
So you're hearing good things.
Yep.
Okay. And if I can make one contribution to your conversation here a couple of minutes ago about the cost of televisions.
Sure.
I didn't quite get all of the detail, but it was to this effect that Sony was severing a relationship with, I think it was Samsung, on LCD production of panels.
Right.
And that they may, in fact, exit the TV, and it may have been just the flat-screen TV business.
Yeah, Sony.
It's a commodity.
Yeah, Sony has always been at the high end of the market with really expensive but very high quality TVs,
mm-hmm.
and I'm guessing they're just getting squeezed out of the market with the $500 50-inch flat panels.
Yep, I think that's the acknowledgement. Okay, thanks.
All right, thanks, George. Yeah, the reality is that for most people, price trumps quality.
Yep. And that was one of the annoying things on the Black Friday sales. One of the local electronic stores had a 46-inch 1080p for $500. They had one of them in the store, and there were 50 people in line waiting for it.
Right.
I didn't even bother going to the store because I knew that's what it would be, and I'd never get a hold of it. And then they had a 27-inch for $80, three of them, I think I heard.
Yep. All right, we have about 3 minutes for Dan from Webster. What's up, Dan?
Hi, it should be a fairly quick question. I've got a computer that I've got like 2 gigabytes of RAM in it, and I've noticed most of the new machines, have like at least 4. I'm running Windows 7, and I've got this little gadget on the screen which shows the percent of memory that I'm using. And with just the 2 gigabytes, I mean, I hardly ever get over 55 to 60% of the memory. And I'm just wondering, am I really only using like 60% of the actual RAM memory?
No, that's usually just processor.
No, I got CPU, memory, disk, network.
No, it's very possible that you're only using 60% of your RAM. The big thing about Windows, it is a multitasking operating system.
Yeah.
So you can have 5 or 6 or 7 or 8 programs running at a time. If you have that many running, if you have more than a couple running, then you really need to have more RAM because otherwise you spend a lot of time thrashing in and out of the swap space on your hard drive. For anybody who uses more than 1 or 2 programs at a time,
which could be web and mail and then your word processor.
Right, much anything, we recommend more RAM, using more of your system.
Your experience is better.
Buying more RAM is what we recommend. You can certainly get away with less, but there will be times when you're finding that your system is using more RAM. And so you spend some time waiting, and if you find yourself waiting, it's time to add more RAM.
Now, here's the one a caveat. Now, your Windows 7, are you 32 or 64-bit?
32.
All right, 4 gig is the most you want to do there. If
3.6 gigs is the most Windows 7 32-bit can
advance.
Yeah,
now, if you go to 64-bit, then, you'd want to upgrade to 8 or more. So as long as you've only got 32-bit, I'd just add another 2-gig stick, and away you go.
While I was sitting here waiting for you, I'd never had done this before, I clicked on a thing on this little memory gadget, and it comes out and it tells me percent of memory V and memory P. Do you know what memory V or memory P would actually be?
Well, memory V could be video.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I have a video card with, 1 gig of
video caching, yeah.
Okay, so that could be the video. Okay. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And a friend of the show, Chris Reich, over on the system. Well, you're right, V could be virtual as well. That's true. But he also said that the rest of the RAM that you're not showing is actually being used by the operating system. There's almost never anymore on any modern operating system is there free RAM just sitting around unused. The operating system will use whatever it needs. If you're running a database, it'll use buffers and things like that. So there's really a bunch of different stuff that could be going on. Listen, we got to take a break.
Okay.
Thanks. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, with Steve Ray, with me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 59 minutes after the hour, and you have been listening to us while we have been talking to you. But you can change that by giving us a call at 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Or if you're outside the 585 area code, it's 1-800-790-0415. And then you can talk to us directly because we have an entire other hour of this show coming up. So stay tuned, stay in your seats, feel free to get up and move freely about your home or car. Well, probably not your car if you're on the road. But we'll be back in just a couple of minutes with a whole lot more of the longest running computer show in the known universe, Soundbites, right here on the truly great and very loud member supported Jazz 90.1.
It's America's longest running computer show. Back to more sound bites with Nick, Dave, and Steve. Next on member supported Jazz 90.1. Sound bites on member supported Jazz 90.1. Get online now. Call 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415. Or submit your question by email at soundbites.org. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on member supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 4 minutes after the hour, we are sound bites. Before we go to the phones, I know Maria is waiting patiently.
Yeah.
When we were talking to Linda and you gave her that sequence and she said she tried it and it didn't work, did you have to do any sort of save business afterwards? And maybe she didn't hit the little save button?
That usually saves itself. I don't have my iPad with me, but on my iPhone, it turned off the preview of the of the mail message, but I'm thinking on the iPad because it has a bigger screen.
It's
always going to show you the preview.
Oh, one other thing, you were talking about the iPhones, you know, and how the interpretation with the, you know, the language.
Right.
Gabriel Iglesias.
Yeah.
He's known as Fluffy.
Fluffy.
Yeah.
Did a whole bit on that he got him and his girlfriend iPhones. So while he's out on the road, they can sit there and text. Well, he was talking, you know, did this restaurant that or this bar that he was at, some Spanish thing, telling her that he was out drinking and all that, this bar. Well, the iPad interpreted it for him as though he was at some pastry shop. And he's telling his friend, because the guy's going, dude, don't do that. Dude, no, you're going to get in trouble. Well, I can't lie to her. You know what? I love you. Kissy, kissy, kissy. And so he sends it. And it interpreted as though he was at some pastry shop. And he goes, look, Jose, my iPhone lied for me. She goes, because well, she texted him back, well, have a good time. Don't eat too much.
Right, all right, all right. All right, back to the phones. Our next call. I had something else I was going to add to that. And now I don't know what it was. Dave interrupted. Our next caller is Marie from Chile. Welcome, Marie. What's your question?
Hi. Question about using the laptop. What can I do so that when I just sometimes even just raise my hands a little, sometimes it wipes out an entire email or it jumps into some other function or window or something that I don't want without even touching the touchpad? And I can't use a mouse because I have hand pain using a mouse, so that's why I have a laptop. So I do need to keep the, you know, the touchpad.
There are two things that we're finding pretty regularly is that people are, in fact, touching the pad, even when they think they're not, because that mm-hmm. the thumb just kind of drops down automatically.
Or it's the heel of this piece of your hand,
right,
whatever you call it.
Yeah. The heel of the thumb can touch it as you move your hand out of the way. There's also the fact that a lot of people rest their hands on the base to either side of the touchpad
mm-hmm.
underneath the mouse. And on most laptops, that's not a very sturdy bit of hardware.
And then your thumbs cross the upper corners of the touchpad to make it easy to accidentally touch it.
Well, and more importantly, if there's no good support underneath the palm, what they call the palm rest, then it warps the plastic, and the touchpad interprets that as somebody touching it.
Mm-hmm.
So for people who type the way you're supposed to, which is fingers off, up in the air and thumbs up, which is the way you're supposed to type and, in fact, play the piano, they don't have that problem, but pretty much everybody else does. And there's no real solution for it for the average laptop because they don't have a lot of support under those edges. And there's, you know, for example, when I'm here, I have a little mouse that I use. And so I just turn off the mouse pad. I don't have a working mouse pad. And that stopped me from typing in the wrong boxes and jumping to other things and closing my browser in the middle of doing something. But I understand you can't, you know, you have trouble with a mouse.
There are.
Have you thought about a trackball?
Yeah, I used to use one. I prefer to use the touchpad system.
There are external touchpads that would connect beside the computer, so mm-hmm. you may not have as much issue with that. Mm-hmm. There are also different shaped mice that are supposed to be more ergonomically designed to avoid a lot of the pain issues
right.
people have with mice. But I remember years ago there was one that you liked, Nick. You said it looked like a lump of clay somebody grabbed with their hand.
Yes.
And it was perfectly
and just
shaped.
Squished. It was perfectly shaped for my hand. They stopped making it, obviously, because it was perfect.
Yeah.
but really, that's an excellent thought that Steve had. Grab. See if you can get hold of an external trackpad.
Mm-hmm.
And then turn off the pad on your laptop, and that should solve a lot of the problem. The other problem, of course, is static electricity, particularly as winter comes on. Our homes are drier, and therefore we have more static electricity. So as I tell people, if you can't, in fact, compute naked, then you should get some sort of anti-static spray and spray it on the floor of your computer area.
Mm-hmm.
If you have a rug there. I have a beautiful winter coat that my wife bought me that I love, but every time I take it off, I spark everything around me. The dogs don't even come near me anymore until I've sat down, because they know that by then I'll...
You're discharged.
Yeah, really, because they've gotten their noses shocked more than once. it obviously that's in the winter when it's dry in the house. But I've learned through painful experience as well to not touch a computer until I've grounded myself. And so that can be also a consideration and a problem.
Okay.
So really there's three things there you can do.
The area that you were talking about that's not the touchpad area, that other...
Is it under the
touchpad or to the sides?
Sides of the touchpad. It's what they call the palm rest, but they shouldn't, because you really shouldn't rest your palms there.
Well, no, it's only like not even a half of an inch under those bars where you click.
No. I'm talking about to the side. So that would be
okay.
Under the control and alt keys and
okay.
under the both sets of control and alt keys to either side
okay.
of the the space bar.
Mm-hmm. Get the gel pads.
Or maybe it's my sleeves that kind of set everything off.
Or it could be, exactly. Yep. It could be a dozen different things.
Yeah.
So try working with shorter sleeves or roll your mm-hmm. sleeves up a bit or,
yeah.
you know, as I said, spray static on the floor, whatever.
Yeah.
But... There's the good thing about touchpads is they're very responsive.
Mm-hmm.
The bad things is they're very sensitive, so that they can be that responsive.
Okay.
That may be a thing too. You can if your touchpad has the settings control
and the sensitivity,
you may be able to turn down the sensitivity.
Oh.
Sometimes I've seen it on the Mac side. There's a control called Ignore Accidental Input. And I always want to know, how does it know it was an accident?
Yeah, right.
Oops.
Right. So give that a try.
All right. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Hey.
There's, like I said, I've said this before, I love trackpads, but they are problematic for most people. for the very reasons we talked about. Resting their palms on the palm rest can warp the mouse pad so that it thinks there's been input.
Yeah, it used to be that the keyboard was closer to you on a laptop, and then IBM had that little eraser thing in the middle that you controlled the mouse with.
Yep.
And then companies started putting a track ball. I think Apple was one of the first ones to actually have a track ball in the front part of the laptop and push the keyboard to the back, and created that wrist rest or palm rest
right.
for your hands. And then the track pads have evolved from that.
Right.
I remember one computer that had a little track ball behind the monitor.
I liked that one actually, except that. Because it brought the keyboard closer to you and everything else. But you're right. People don't – you can't spend a half an hour with your hand up in the air like that. People are just not – you're not used to it.
And IBM had the eraser mouse.
Yep. We loved the eraser mouse too. But again, people didn't like that. So having a built-in mouse, the mouse pad is a great idea.
What she might be able to do, she might want to consider – if you know if it is giving her too much problems, is you can get USB glide pads.
That's what he said.
I'm looking for it. Logitech and Kensington are the two big peripheral companies, neither of them make it.
Caller on the line. I didn't hear you say that.
Yeah, no, that's all right.
So it's got to be one of the smaller peripheral companies.
All right. Well, Steve looks that up. We're going to take another call. We're going to go to Larry from Rochester. Welcome, Larry. What's your question?
First of all, happy almost 23 years on the air.
Thank you so much.
Listened to you for that long.
Sweet.
Wow.
Yes, I have.
You're old, Larry.
I just bought myself, after always having a PC, an iMac this Christmas.
Congratulations.
And, of course, being a PC person, this is a new beast. First, I haven't had a home PC, if you will, in a number of years. I've always used my laptop and what have you from work.
But right.
First thing I've done is installed Norton antivirus before I did anything else. And then after going out and buying a couple of books on the iMac, I've turned on the firewall. What I'd like to know, is there anything else I need to be doing? I went to your Security Tango and looked at a few things for the Mac. I'm not sure if I need to do anything else to, you know, help keep the PC secure.
On a daily basis?
Generally not. It's even in the Windows world, it's more an issue of behavior. Be very careful about what you click on web pages.
Mm-hmm.
Safari and Firefox and Google on the Mac are on Windows 2 are much safer than the older versions of IE that would let anything through.
Mm-hmm.
And be careful when you click on things. Read messages when they pop up. We had a customer this week that said she was on Skype and a window popped up and said, "We can fix the problems on your computer. Just give us your credit card."
Mm-hmm.
How does it know she has problems? How does it know what they are? How can it fix it? So if you think half a second, that's usually the way to keep yourself safe. And then don't go to the dark alleys.
Okay.
Don't walk down dark
with
alleys
with
$20 bills hanging out of your pocket.
Okay. And then one last question. I have an HP DeskJet. It's a D4360. I took it off my laptop because HP just installed more stuff on it than I wanted to be bothered with. And that once I put it on the laptop, it slowed the boot up time to almost 8 minutes.
I love HP hardware and absolutely detest their software.
A lot of times what you can find on HP's website, what HP does is they install all this extra software. Some of it is bi-directional, so when the printer has a paper jam, a message pops up on your computer, or
mm-hmm.
your computer can tell you when the printer's out of ink. Well, you'll mm-hmm. know that when it stops printing.
Right.
Yeah.
So if you can look on HP's website, and a lot of times they'll have a driver-only download.
Now,
and there'll be something called
iMac Book says that the Mac has all sorts of drivers for most of the printers in the known
right.
universe.
Generally, if you plug the printer in and it works, you're all set.
And that means I won't have to pull out this disk and put this atrocious. I tell you,
generally,
I hate it.
Right, and generally you wouldn't want to use the disk anyway. You would want to download the latest driver from the HP website.
Okay.
And HP specifically makes a difference between the full feature driver, and for that printer it's 135 megs with extra crap.
Okay.
Or the print only driver, which is 20 megs with just the printing software.
I just want to be able to print. print out some pictures of the grandkids and what have you, but I don't want this thing
all the extra stuff,
talking to the network. I don't want it slowing down the boot up time to 10 minutes because it does all this stuff.
Yeah, easiest thing is just plug it in, see if it works, and if it doesn't work, then you go to HP's website and download the print driver only. Don't get the full featured software, just the print driver.
Well, I haven't been a member before, but I am today.
That's what I like to hear.
Thank you very much.
Thank you so much, Larry.
Have a happy new year.
You too.
And same goes for Windows, too. If when you're downloading printer drivers, see if they have a print only. Don't get out that full featured or all the extra software that just bogs your system down.
I really detest HP software. I love their printers. I hate their software. Most of the time, as Larry said, it slows boot time. It annoys the living patoot out of me, and I don't like it. I don't like it.
Well, the problem is they haven't taken the time to rewrite the code.
Well, a lot of it, because we see sort of both sides of the coin. It's for the novice user, someone who's never used a computer before, and they say print, and nothing happens.
Right.
But if a message popped up on your screen and said out of paper, then they could fix the problem.
Now, where I do like it is on some of my friends, I've helped them set up, take an old computer and set up a print server for the house.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Now, that's got the monitor on it. That's got the software on it. So if there is a problem, they see it. And I get that. But it's not on my machine, and it's not slowing down my load times because I'm actually printing off another machine on the network.
Yep.
I mean is just alone installing their software. It almost takes a lifetime. I mean, they could improve the code as far as installing.
Yeah,
that is the longest. You could almost read War and Peace.
Yeah. Yeah, and Larry's right. It often slows down your boot time and everything else. Remove it. First, download the driver-only software. And as Steve said, it's much smaller. That's one of the ways you can tell the difference. And then remove the bloatware and just install the driver.
Yeah, the updater. You know, don't do that. You used to be able to register, and they'd send you an email letting you know when there was an update for your driver.
Right. All right, we are going to take a break, but we will be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 19 minutes after the hour. We're Soundbites on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Oh. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 23 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites, and we have Rick from Irondequoit on the line. Welcome, Rick. What's your question?
Hello, guys, and Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you, too.
Wishing you guys a good 2012.
You, too.
Question. A friend, of course, over Christmas got a Kindle Fire.
Yeah, a friend got it.
Uh-huh. Yes.
Wink, wink. Nod, nod.
No, I didn't get one, and that's the reason I'm calling you guys.
Ah.
What do you think of them? And I guess a little background first. I do email, maybe play some, online games, not too, too intensive, but Angry Birds, things like that.
Yes. Right.
Facebook, stuff like that. And wondering if that's a good thing to get. I also, the other thing I would add to that is I do some writing or Word documents, if you will, nothing too intense or anything like that, but wondering if that's a good machine, a good, buy for that kind of stuff in a tablet.
Well, up until you said you do some writing.
Okay.
I would have said okay. In terms of being an e-reader, it is, of course, excellent. In terms of doing your email, you can do it. I wouldn't write huge long emails on it. I wouldn't necessarily want it to be my only email program.
Mm-hmm.
You can certainly play Angry Birds and a couple of other things on it. But in terms of any lengthy writing, any of the tablets have the same problem that phones have. You just don't want to write for a long time on them. You can. It just gets in the way because it's tiring. The real problem with all of these is the fact that it's only a simulated keyboard on a piece of glass. And studies over generations have showed us that the way keyboards keep you from getting carpal tunnel any faster than you already do is because there's a certain amount of give to them. As you tap down on them, there's a certain amount of give. If you're tapping on glass all the time, your hands get tired much, much faster.
No give whatsoever.
No give whatsoever.
You can add a physical keyboard to many of the tablets. I don't know if you can do that with the Kindle. But then you're at a netbook.
Right. You might as well mm-hmm. get a netbook. But for the rest of the stuff, it's not bad at all. As I tell people all the time, tablets and phones are really consumer devices, not creator devices.
Okay, that's a good thought, actually.
You know, thank you. And so the best thing to do, you know, if you want to watch a movie on it, if you want to do all that stuff, it's great. Any one of them is great. The Kindle Fire had a couple of glitches that Amazon said they were going to produce an update for. I haven't seen it yet, but then I don't own a Kindle, so I haven't paid much attention to it. I own a Nook tablet.
Yeah, one of the big things is Kindle has their one-click purchasing system.
Right.
So when you hand your tablet to your children, they can buy whatever they want very easily without entering a password.
Sure. Now, you said something about a netbook. Would that be my next step up, we'll say, from that to go into, again, some minor writing or whatever?
That's the next step up. It's not a tablet.
Okay.
So it doesn't do some tablet-y things.
No touch screen at all. Everything is keyboard input.
Right, okay.
Right. On the other hand...
Just a smaller laptop?
What?
Just a smaller laptop?
It's essentially just a smaller laptop. Now, on the other hand, what you want to do is check out the Asus Transformer.
Okay.
It is an Android tablet that plugs into a keyboard. So it looks like a regular clamshell notebook.
Okay.
So you close it up and you can carry it around and you open it up. It's got a full keyboard, do all of that stuff. But when you want it to be a tablet, you just hit the release and the screen pops out and it's a tablet.
Oh, wow. That sounds cool.
And it's an Android tablet. So you can still do, you know, a little bit of writing, a little bit of this and that. The one that I have came with Polaris Office, which is Microsoft Office compatible. So you can write Word documents and spreadsheets and presentations that'll be compatible with PowerPoint.
Yeah, I do some of the PowerPoint stuff too. So
so you can do all of that
a little bit.
Right, you can do all of that. More importantly, though, you can do those on your regular machine and move them over to that.
Okay.
And even show them from there if you want to.
Okay.
So that's the one that to me is the if you really want to have tablet functionality and be able to do a little bit of real creativity,
okay,
creating, then the Asus Transformer is the best of the lot. Now, if you're looking for a smaller tablet, then certainly take a look at the MacBook Air, the smaller of the MacBook. Does the MacBook Air have two sizes now?
Yeah, 11 and 13.
Yeah, the 11-inch MacBook Air is a beautiful size.
Okay.
But it does not have a touchscreen and yada, 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 and it's a Mac operating system. It's not the iPad operating system. It's the real Mac operating system.
Okay.
So, you know, there's trade-offs, but if you're actually looking for something that's tablet-y, take a look at the Asus Transformer.
Okay, great. Thanks for the information. I appreciate it.
All righty, thanks.
Yeah, one neat thing with the Transformer is that there's two batteries in it. There's a battery in the screen half of it and a battery in the keyboard half of it.
Right, and the battery in the keyboard half recharges the screen. So you get about 18 hours altogether. I have one at work, and I can carry it around for an entire day and still have an entire battery's worth of power left because every time I plug it back into the keyboard, it recharges the screen.
Yep.
So it's very, very cool. I'm very impressed by that tablet. It's not as much fun as my Chromebook, But it's a pretty nifty little product, and I'm very impressed by it. All right, our next caller is Steve from Rochester, New York. Welcome, Steve. What's your question?
Hello, you guys. Happy New Year for all these years, both AM and FM, public and non-public broadcasting.
Thank you, Steve. What can we do for you?
Okay, well, it's a question all three of you guys can answer. I need Dave the mechanic, I need Steve the driver of the search engines, and, of course, Maestro Nick the conductor of Tea and Sympathy, where tea is theory.
Ooh, he really worked that one good.
Wow.
I've been rehearsing a little bit, so.
Apparently you have.
Very good, sir.
Wasted not my time on hold. Here.
There you go.
Okay, the question is about the Windows product key and the subcategory is if a 6 really was a 9. Like Dr. House, I work on some of the very oldest and sickest machines, and I got a broken laptop, which is an HP. And the label, like Dave was speaking about a couple of weeks ago, was really damaged and hard to read. Now, years ago, I could solder together two wires the size of a human hair. Now I'm having trouble seeing the two human hairs. So,
yeah, right.
Are there still human hairs there?
I'm having trouble seeing the heads they were on.
Yeah, yeah. I know, Nick. I know. Truman was president when I was born, and that's a long time ago. Unfortunately, you know, Superman gets his strength from the yellow sun. Us mortals, that yellow sun up there maybe doesn't do us as much good.
Yep. But,
anyway,
as Catherine Hepburn once said, getting old is not for wimps.
Yes, but it's something that we all do at that 1 second per
second. But I might be able to help you if you're trying to find the product key and, like you said, it's totally erased.
Well, it's partly erased. For example, is it B0R62 or is it PQR62?
All right, here,
yeah, hard to know.
What you want to do is if you go to, I believe, if you go to downloads.com, which is CNET, and or just Google. There is a utility out there that will allow you to look at your product key code on your machine.
If the computer's running, key finder. If the computer's running enough to get into, you can get your Windows code. You can get your Office code, and they have one for the Mac too to bring up your Microsoft Office codes.
This is a Vista machine, so
my condolences.
The registry and the value is Microsoft Windows NT. Current version, and the digital ID is a different number than it's on the label.
Right. You've got to get that key finder program.
So the question is the, do I, well, first, let me, there was a program that I found on the net a while ago that checks for the correct value of, for example, charge cards. Not every number is in the charge card field. Is there a similar utility that checks the characters of the product code? Or should I just try, for example, B0R or PQR?
The Windows installer will check, and if it's wrong, it tells you.
Let me do it.
Yeah, it really does pick every letter. So your best bet is to run KeyFinder.
Yeah, and some of the digits are hard to distinguish.
A B and an 8.
Yeah,
B and an eight.
A G and a 6.
And a 6, yeah. An O and a 0.
Yeah, I use the magnifying glass, and the label is actually scraped, so
it was one of the problems
gone.
With putting that label on the bottom of the computer is it gets all scraped up,
especially laptops.
Yeah,
well, Dave was saying that he used a an overcoating of a
label. I just use like packing tape. I'll take even Scotch tape, but I like the packing tape better because it's a little bit wider and it fits perfectly over the labels. Because on a desktop, it won't usually get wiped off, but like Steve was just saying, on a laptop, they're always put on the bottom for protection. But, you know, the minute you get it, throw a piece of tape on it.
Well, this machine was...
At least over just the numbers. I mean, it doesn't hit... regular Scotch tape.
Yeah, better than nothing.
Yeah, it's, protecting it.
A friend of mine got a laptop from out of town. He lives in New York City. And it came with a sticker on the back that said, Windows activation code inside battery cover.
Yep.
Yeah,
and he opens the battery cover, and it's on the actual
That's
stickers
perfect.
On the inside of there.
Yes,
yeah, at least it protects it from wear and tear.
Unless, of course, the battery overheats. But,
right, and then
then you have more problems anyway. So,
Well, that's a good thing to do though with the all your documentation and that type of stuff. What I encourage folks to do is take their key code, write it down, and put it with all their other usually the CD that you're going to have to reinstall. Write the key code down so you don't have to flip over the laptop and try to type.
Because that's the only thing, too. When you're trying to retype it back in, you have to turn the laptop over, get a couple of keys, turn it right side up, type them in, turn it back over, get a few more letters, turn it back up.
So if you're making your own CDs, which normally you got to do with a laptop anyways, on that the flap of the CD envelope,
or a case, write it down and, you know, put tape it to the jewel case or whatever you're putting it in. So then that way when you're reinstalling, the key code's right there.
Yeah. And the other thing you might want to suggest to folks is also to make a bootable CD or a USB to allow you to reset your password, because in case there's an issue with, did I remember to capitalize or not capitalize, it is a bear to get in there and change that. This machine, unfortunately, had a brush with gravity. It must have fell at going 32 feet per second per second, or 9.81 meters per second.
But the fall didn't do it.
9.80665.
It cracked the screen, it broke the hinge, it took the case.
But like I say, the fall never does it.
No, it's the hitting the ground.
It's a sudden impact of stopping.
And then
it's
when you deceleration.
Then you give them a $1,000 quote for the repair, and they're mad at you.
Well, because you broke everything in it.
Yeah, right.
Well, the laptop, just the screens alone can sometimes cost more than
a replacement screen. Exactly right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, that's why this machine was left on the dung heap, and I thought, well, let's see if I can get it to go, and I was able to resurrect it, so I can get it running. I can try to find the key finder. So if you could put out a listing there, Steve, where I can find the key finder code.
The company is Magical Jelly Bean.
Magic Jelly Bean, that's what I thought it was.
They have what Steve will do is put it in the link section of the website, and we'll be good to go.
And they have a Mac version, too. And it finds more than just your Microsoft product codes. It finds just about every license code in your computer.
For Office and everything else.
Well, I'm on my Mac here. It found my FileMaker codes. It found my Adobe codes. It found my OmniFocus. I didn't even know I bought that, but I've got a code for it in there.
I'm going to write one for Linux. It'll just come up and say, it's open source, you moron.
You don't need no stinking key.
I had another little application. It was a VBX that you could run, but it was only good for Windows 98.
It's stored
differently in Vista, so the query doesn't bring back the code.
Right. KeyFinder finds all of that stuff.
If I use the code that's actually listed in the machine, would that work also, or is there a universe? In other words, my question are the codes absolute?
Yes.
The codes are absolute.
Yes, they are absolute. Every character counts, and they're all different.
And so the code that's stored in the machine, is that the code that the installer wants to see?
No,
that's on the label.
Yeah, the code on the label is sometimes called the key code or the product code. Mm-hmm. The code you get from inside the machine is the product ID code, which is different.
Okay. Totally different.
That was the essence of my question. So the product ID code is not the code that it's going to ask for.
Mm-mm. Right.
Nope.
It's the code on the label.
But KeyFinder does find the code for the label.
Yep.
Right. KeyFinder finds that internal code.
So that's the one I can do.
And most of
I'm going to have to put in likely candidates, because like I said, is it B0R or is it PQR?
Right.
You know, because the two letters, there's only part of it remaining.
Right.
It's difficult to see what the original letter was. So KeyFinder would be the way to go.
Yes, sir.
I'm looking at my Microsoft Office code and one of the sections. It's with Microsoft products, it's usually five sections of five-digit alphanumeric codes. One of my codes is B87QJ. So I've got a B and an 8 right next to each other. I've got a Q that could be an O because the descender is touching the J.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Exactly. It makes it very difficult. I got one that could be WFFQY, or it could be WEEQY, be WEFQY, you know?
Yep, you never know. That's why you need KeyFinder.
Yeah, that's why I was wondering if there was a utility that checked the validity of the characters.
Wouldn't that be nice? No. It's not like a bunch of other things which have an algorithm of some sort, or Social Security numbers which have no algorithm at all.
Right.
It's each number is unique.
Yeah.
And often unique to that specific version of Windows. So a code for Vista is a different combination than a code for Vista Service Pack 1, which is different from Service Pack 2.
Mm-hmm. So Magic Jelly Bean would actually be the best.
That's the one.
For the one to run. Well, all three of you guys, thank you very much for help and assistance. We appreciate it. It's good to be there for all these years, and I hope you'll be there for so many more to call up once in a while when we do need your help and assistance.
Thank you, Steve.
Thank you again. Have a very good
thank
new
you.
Year. Let's
have
hope
a great
for everybody than it was last time.
You aren't kidding. Thanks.
All right, man. Bye.
All right. We are going to take another break, but we will be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, with Steve Ray, with me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 39 minutes after the hour, which means you only have another 20 minutes to give us a call and be part of the longest-running computer show in the known universe. And you all know by now that is Soundbites. And we are right here on the truly great member-supported Jazz 90.1. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And at 43 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. And I have an actual additional news item here. Google's mission to compete with Facebook and social networking may be gaining speed. On Tuesday, Paul Allen, a researcher, published an analysis saying that Google+, the company's social networking service, has reached 62 million registered users. More important, one quarter of all users signed up in December alone, he said, putting it on a path to sustained global growth. Mr. Allen hasn't admitted self-interest in seeing Google Plus succeed. He makes applications designed to be used on social networks. And his methodology in coming up with the number of users is innovative and not exactly ironclad. He gathered from the United States Census Bureau a list of 400 surnames that are uncommon in the United States, like Distler, Wooding, and Loop, L-O-U-P. Using Elance, which is a website where freelancers bid for jobs, he got a count of the number of people with those names on Google+, and extrapolated from his list what those numbers say about the overall population of Google+. Over time, Mr. Allen has changed the mix of names to try to reflect the number of people on Google+ outside the United States, where some of those names might be more common. Mr. Allen also tracks his estimates against information Google provides about the population of Google+ during its quarterly earnings call. In July, Google said Google Plus had 10 million members. In October, the number was 40 million. Google does not supply additional information about the population of Google Plus. In Mr. Allen's analysis, the high percentage of new users matters because it would mean Google is getting people to join at an accelerated rate. It's gaining 625,000 people a day, Mr. Allen said. In the last week of November, it was signing up 199,000 a day. By the end of this month, Mr. Allen thinks Google Plus will have 65 million users. When Google Next announces its earnings in mid-January, he said, I expect Larry Page will announce they have 75 million users. Maybe so, but a more important issue is whether an acceleration in signups will continue. There is some reason to believe it will, because social networks tend to become more useful to people as more people they know join them and keep them entertained with status updates and links to other things on the web. Also, new versions of Android, Google's mobile operating system, will have automatic sign-up for Google+. This will drive traffic, so possibly along with some usage-killing resentment from being dragooned into yet another social network. While that number is still less than the minimum of 800 million people that Facebook claims, it would make Google+ the second-largest social network within 18 months of its introduction. Are you on Google+? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299, or toll-free at 1-800-790-0415. I find myself using Google+ a lot more than I use any other social network. I still do some stuff on Twitter, but very rarely, and I almost never go to Facebook except to talk to my daughter when she's because she's on Facebook 24/7. But I find myself using Google Plus for almost everything that I do. It seems to me to be faster and a lot more relevant stuff. And of course, you can do Google Hangouts there, which are so cool. You can do video conferencing with you and up to 9 other people. So you can have 10 people sharing a room, and it seems to work very, very nicely, very, very well. So I've been very pleased with it. Luckily, I can also do it now on my phone, so I don't even have to be sitting at my computer at home. Of course, I can do it on my Chromebook, my beautiful Chromebook, which I love. And
you're welcome.
Thank you. And so, there's a lot of stuff there that I really like. Google Plus has also added this very cool new thing. They've added a volume slider to your circles. You put people in circles like in other places you put them in lists, and so they can come in your stream. But now every circle comes with a volume slider. So you can say, I want to see more from this stream or less from this stream. So I have people who are Rochesterians or technoids or, you know, whatever they are. And I can say, well, I want to see more from this group, less from that group. And you can sort of fine tune who you hear stuff from regularly. And I like that a lot more. On Facebook, it seems they make the decision for me. So I almost never see anything from my wife. And I really do want to see things from my wife because she gets porky when I don't. When I say I didn't see that. So I really like it. And I'll go back to the main page. You do it right from the main page, and you click on one of your circles, and then you see up next to the name of the circle on the main section.
Oh yeah,
there's
yeah,
a slider.
It's behind the pop-up tip, telling me what the slider's going to do.
Yeah, you get a pop-up tip that tells you what the slider is, and then you can say okay to that, and then you can change the slider so you can have less or more of any particular group of any particular circle, so that you can sort of fine tune what you see. I really like that. I'll tell you that right now, which is one of the things that's made me go more toward Google Plus than it has toward any of the other places, because I see more of the stuff that's relevant to me. You know, if I'm and I can change them obviously on a moment's notice. I can also look directly at that circle, which happens in a lot of places. But
you show up a lot in my circles,
and well, I should. I post a lot. Yeah. I tell you, I post mostly in Google Plus these yep. days.
Merry Christmas with Amelia. Have you seen all of the? What's the polite word? Crap. On Twitter and Facebook and Google Plus, from kids griping about what they didn't get for Christmas.
Oh, see, I don't see any of that on Google Plus, but I've certainly seen it on Facebook.
I didn't
and Twitter.
Get an iPhone. F my mother. F my father. Christmas. I got a car, but that's different.
Right. Oh, you got a car for Christmas and didn't get a phone. Shut up. First world problems right there. And had they gotten the phone and not the car, they would have complained about the car.
Yep.
Shotguns. This is why we're not allowed to carry shotguns in public.
Have you seen Know Your...
Wait, yes, we are.
Yeah. Got that gun rack.
Yeah, right.
In the back of my pickup truck.
KnowYourMeme.com.
Yep.
So you can keep track of what the current trending memes are.
It's important to do if you're going to spend all your life on the internet.
Yep.
But yeah, I will admit that I spend much more time on crossbows works for me too. Yeah, thanks. Chris mentioned that I put great quotes on Facebook. I've got thousands and thousands and thousands of quotes that I've saved over the years, and I randomly post them on places, Facebook and Twitter and Google Plus. I will say that I found this little tag on a pair of gloves that my wife got. And I put it on both Facebook and Google saying, can anybody explain to me what these symbols actually mean? And I started off with a funny one, which was, do not plant your tulips upside down in a pot. And I will say that after a week of people answering me, on Google you get more definitively correct answers, and on Facebook you get more funny answers. So I suppose that's the difference right there. Between the two, although I still prefer Google Plus.
I'm invisible.
What do you mean you're invisible?
I don't know. It says I'm invisible.
Where'd you go?
Well, you've made yourself invisible. Click the Go Visible button, and you will now be visible. That's on chat.
Oh, chat visibility.
That's chat visibility. It has very little to do with whether people see your stuff in the stream.
As soon as you show up on chat, a million people jump in and chat you.
Sometimes you can start your own Hangout. The real problem with Hangouts is you can only do them with 9 people at a time, although there are companies now that will stream your Hangout. So you can do a Hangout. For example, I could start a Hangout, bring you 3 guys into it.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody else could see it but not talk on it. So, you know, that's an odd sort of a thing. I've used Google Hangouts to talk to my students. I've used Google Hangouts to do tech support. So a lot of that stuff works.
That's one we were talking about a little while ago.
Oh, yeah, you're right. Here's another news item. Netflix and The Gap were among the worst performers in customer satisfaction or among the largest online retailers this holiday season, according to a survey that was released on Wednesday. Of course, the way my week has been going on, they probably changed it all Friday afternoon at 4:30. Overstock.com came last out of the 40 largest online retailers with a rating of 72 out of 100, which I would have thought would be nice, but it's apparently last, down 4 points from last year, according to a survey by a company called 4C. Gap.com, the Gap's main website, was second last with 73 points. Down 5 from a year ago. Other laggards included Buy.com and websites run by Sony and Toys R Us. Customer satisfaction is important for retailers because it can lead to higher sales, more loyalty, more return people coming back, and increased word of mouth recommendations. Netflix saw the biggest decline in customer satisfaction after the company tried to raise prices and split its DVD and video streaming services. The plan was scrapped after customers defected by the millions.
Yeah, I mean, that's why I wanted to just quick touch it. I did. I mean, I loved it when I could do both the streaming and have one video at a time for it was under $10 a month. That was great.
Yep.
You know, but the minute they split it off, and now they want $8 for each. It's like
I'm guessing the movie industry was involved in that.
Yeah, I doubt they did it.
Netflix was initially
discs. Didn't they undo that, or did they?
They were going to spin it off as Quickster, but if you spelled it differently, you got too many other people. So they decided not to spin it off. They're still raising the prices, but they didn't separate the two companies.
Right.
So streaming and DVDs are now two separate subscriptions. The biggest pain with having two services is you would have to log in and manage two separate accounts and two separate queues, which was a biggest user annoyance. But being able to do it now under one account is better.
Right. And honestly, we Redbox movies more than anything else. And in terms of the streaming, we stream all the time. All right, that's it. It's another week. It's the last time we're going to do this year. So if you don't like it, too bad. You've wasted two more hours of your life with us. But you've got plenty of year coming up that we'll be back to do a lot more of this. Please be safe this New Year's Eve. Be very careful where you go and what you do. It's amateur drinkers night, and so be careful out there. We want to thank everybody for listening, and for Dave Enright, for Steve Ray, for me, Nick Francesco. Thanks to all of you for listening to the longest-running computer show in the known universe, Soundbites. And don't forget, right here on member-supported Jazz 90.1, George is coming in with the German program, so listen. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. The group.